It's time for Compassion Over Killing's Vegan Family Podcast with your hosts, Eric C. Lindstrom and Cheryl Leahy.
Welcome to this week's Vegan Family Podcast, and we are opening up our kitchen pantries or cabinets, and we will be taking you on a tour of the vegan necessities for your family.
And there will be nutritional yeast. Our household is even a bit more challenging, Cheryl, since we're also gluten-free.
Whatever the challenge, there are so many incredible options, alternatives, and ingredients and products that you already use that are vegan.
Like spices. I can't think of many, if any, spices that contain meat, dairy, or eggs. And spices, of course, are the spice of life. We're excited about this tasty episode of the Vegan Family Podcast, brought to you by Compassion Over Killing and TryVeg.com. We'll be right back.
Since 1995, Compassion Over Killing has served as an unwavering force, bringing about positive changes for animals. Please consider a tax-deductible donation today. Visit COK.net for more.
And we're back.
Yes, yeah, so we have some feedback this week, Cheryl.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We have our first feedback. And actually, my favorite one, my most interesting one, I think, is from our own Simone, who is our director of outreach. And she's also a developmental psychologist. She's been for decades a professor of psychology in Brazil. And she said that one of the most common questions she gets is about age appropriateness of things to share with children about so-called difficult topics. So I thought it was really interesting because she said this is what she says, a good pointer is listening to the children's questions. They are a huge indicator of what they want to know, what they can understand, and what they're ready to hear. And she said she can elaborate more later, and I know that we're going to take her up on that. We might have her on the show pretty soon. But she said that's a really good pointer for how to think about how to talk to kids, which I think is so true. I really love that because, you know, they will process things their own way, and they will tell you, either through their comments or their questions, you know, what they are thinking about and what they want to hear.
It's so important. I mean, that holds true with any relationship you have, whether it's parental or with your spouse or partner. And listening to questions is such an important way and effective way of leading into sort of the bigger discussion. Because I'll be the first one to say, I mean, my kids are young, and so I'm somewhat guilty about perhaps kind of inadvertently, you know, spoon feeding them some of the things I know that I want them to know or want them to think or say. But by listening to their questions, you get so much further. You get so much more out of them. You get to hear what they're actually, legitimately curious about. And that's such an interesting perspective to take with young kids in any regard. And I think this works, like I said, up until at any age, that if you're listening to people's questions, you're really getting to the core of what you really want to talk about.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it works for adults too. And I think with my kids, I've noticed just their difference in personality, where one of them will come to me with questions that seem, it's always like driving in the car or some, you know, before bed or whatever, where it's just like their brain is just sort of resting and thing, you know, their brain's just talking to them. I want to say stuff. And one of them will really ask me a question, and I can kind of get a sense of how he's thinking about things. And the other one, it's funny because he doesn't really seem to ask the questions. He will just tell you the way it is, right? Like he'll give you his impression of how this thing works. And it's funny when you know that he's not fully confident that he's got it right. So he'll just say, maybe this is how it works.
ending with a question.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe that's what happened. Yeah. Like, this is here because this bad guy came and then just left it there. And maybe. And so that's his version, basically, of asking a question. It's like he's going to throw out his impression, wait to see what sort of reaction he gets, and then adjust it accordingly. And so one thing I've really noticed with both kids is just sort of pausing after they say whatever they're going to say, question or comment. And I say, what do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes they're like, I don't know. And I'll be like, do you want me to tell you what I think? And they're like, yeah. And sometimes they just sort of launch into, well, I was saying this because, and I was thinking about that. And we can have just like the greatest, you know, kind of conversations. And even the way kids think about stuff is so interesting because we already have filtered out so many things that we don't think are relevant. And we have the language to say things that maybe kids don't. Like driving the other day, my younger one was coughing and he's like, did some coughing. And he's like, Mom, that was a quiet cough, but it was really supposed to be a loud cough, but it just ran out of gas.
Oh my God. Rating a cough.
And I was like, it just ran out of gas. Like, I totally get that.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're saying. We've all been there. But maybe wouldn't describe it that way.
Exactly.
So I love this idea of kind of just listening to them and where they are.
Yeah.
And then I remember reading in a parenting book, I don't remember which one, but it was one of the popular ones, that if you want to, you know, a lot of people are getting frustrated, like, you know, you ask your kid, how was your day? What are you thinking about? You know, and you don't get much of an answer. The best way to get the answer is just to say, do you want to hear about my day? I'll tell you what I did.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm thinking about. Yeah. And then you kind of get the conversation going.
I
think this tip is so great.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if the tip, if we could turn it into something even more practical for our listeners, and that's to, you know, make the effort to ask questions every day. And so whether it be at dinner time, where it may be vegan food related, or maybe at bedtime, where you can talk about, you know, why we care about animals the way we do. But just always to take the time to make sure you ask your kids about veganism as it relates to their lives and your family. And if you do that every day with each one of your kids, by the end of the week, you will have, I think, really generated quite a lot of discussion about the topic in a very sort of casual and comfortable way.
Yeah, and I think my favorite part about that is sort of how they think about their own role and how they think about animals,
yeah,
what happens to animals and how they can help animals, which sort of leads us into another feedback point that we got, which I just love, about how a vegan 10-year-old thinks about his own veganism.
Yeah.
And he says, his mom says he kind of thinks about it like cannibalism. He says that, he says, we're all animals and eating someone else's body is weird.
Yeah.
That pretty much sums it up.
I know. And actually, that's a perfect segue to an adorable conversation I had with my 4-year-old the other night as we were going to bed. So, as we say in the showbiz, roll clip.
It's time for another cute kid quote.
Tell me, what is your favorite animal?
I just told you it.
Tell me again.
Oh. I'm cat, kitty, dog, puppy.
Your favorite animals?
Yeah,
cat, kitty, dog, puppy.
And I like all the rest of the animals except a scary thing, bear.
You don't like bears?
No.
Because they're too scary?
Yeah, because they do like this. Oh, how did you do it?
Okay. Oh, yeah, with the claws. They're really scary, huh?
Yeah. Because they're so brown, they're fuzzy, sharp, they're scary.
Yeah.
Just like the bear hunt that we do with movement.
That's right. So, do you ever eat animals?
No.
Why would someone eat an animal?
Because they're gluten, but you never eat a real animal except its food.
Yeah, we wouldn't eat animals, right?
If we eat an animal that's not even food, they'll be dead and they'll be sad.
Yeah, we don't want to do that, do we?
No.
Animals are our friends?
Yeah, animals are our friends. Animals are nice to make milk that are gluten.
Yeah, that's so
cows
nice.
Do it. Only cows.
Only cows make gluten?
What a gluten milk.
Oh.
Wait, do horses do it?
Who do cows make milk for?
Gluten. and people.
No, for baby cows.
Oh, and for gluten people. No.
Do you like being vegan?
Yeah, I like being vegan.
So, now we're back in our kitchen, back at our pantry and cupboards.
All right.
Check it out. What do you have in your pantry and cupboard? What do you have? Well, how do you want to do this? I was thinking about starting with sort of the staples, the things that meals are built around, or things that almost always make an appearance on our plates.
Yeah, and you guys are gluten-free, you said. So yeah, that's a little going to be a little bit more challenging or a little bit different. But I think it's getting much more popular to be gluten-free.
Yeah, well, again, if you don't mind, I'll jump into this because I do have the basis, I think, for what you and I can springboard into greater conversations about both meal preparation as well as perhaps touring, you know, our cupboards and pantries and then ultimately our refrigerator. So when we plan a meal, which mostly I'm doing the cooking, we'll start with rice, which is always gluten-free and vegan. Sometimes white rice, sometimes brown rice, sometimes wild rice, sometimes risotto. All of those rices are, you know, sort of the basics or the basis of a lot of the meals we make. And or pasta. And so the pasta that we eat is a brown rice pasta. Our favorite brand is Tinchiata, which is a company out of Canada. It makes for the most sort of durable, chewy, like delicious pasta. And it comes in penne, and it comes in elbow macaroni and spaghetti. And so if we're starting to like tour our own pantry and think about how we eat in a gluten-free and vegan household, we can start with rice. And then we can start building on top of that rice, things like tofu and tempeh and all the vegetables and all of the, you know, like a bibimbap, like a rice bowl kind of idea. Mm-hmm. And you can almost do the same thing with pasta, where if you boil up a bag of pasta, the marinara sauce is already vegan. All the vegetables you can throw in are vegan. We can, if we want to, shred some vegan Parmesan cheese on top of it if, you know, the kids want that night. But basically, if we start in our pantry with the rice and the pasta, we can build any meal from there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the challenge that some people have when transitioning to veganism is feeling like they picture this plate with this sort of meat and potatoes and a side, and then they just like remove the meat and they're like, what do we do?
I know, right?
And so, you know, especially having been vegan for a long time and then also having to, you know, once you have a family, it's like you have to adjust to not only your own preferences, but everybody else's sort of things that they gravitate to. And I think basing it on a starch like that is really the way to go, because that's what...
It's very, you know, filling. Yeah. I mean, I can remember when I first went vegan and discovered that pesto can easily be made vegan. In fact, a lot of on-shelf pestos are already vegan, you know, with basil and some garlic and some olive oil and whatever other ingredients you want to add. Once I knew pesto and pasta were vegan, I was like, well, there we go. I can survive. Like, my entire life is just set out in front of me. I'll just eat pesto penne for the rest of my life because I love pesto.
So, yeah, there's like, more than one vegan who is a self-described pastatarian.
So with that pasta also, there's, of course, rice noodles, glass noodles. There's amazing wide noodles, you know, these Asian-style noodles that are like almost look like a lasagna. They're so wide. And those with, you know, soy sauce, which is in our pantry or in our, ultimately ends up in our fridge. But we use a lot, of course, soy sauce or, as we were talking about earlier, liquid aminos. Mm-hmm. You know, those are definitely ways to, again, bring in that sort of savory aspect to the dishes. What else do you have? Let's start our day off. What does your morning look like in your breakfast and household pantry and cupboards?
We do a lot of oatmeal.
Yeah.
And that's because it's so easy to, I mean, the oatmeal itself is good. It's filling and, you know, it hits a lot of the, you know, healthy, it's sustainable, it's, you know, fast and kids like it and everything. And then we'll throw, our normal way to do oatmeal is to throw frozen berries on it.
Oh, nice.
And I
yeah.
think what's really good about, so everybody says, you know, you have to eat the berries. I actually saw something on nutritionfacts.org about cognitive bumps that you get from eating blueberries. And that's like within a couple hours of eating blueberries.
Wow.
So every time that I, you know, think about what is my sort of mental checklist for the day. Berries is always on there. And you can put them in a smoothie or cereal or whatever. But we really like to eat them on the oatmeal. And what's nice is the oatmeal's hot, the berries are frozen. Like, you know, it's not like giving your kid a boiling hot soup for breakfast. So, you know, that's really good. And the other thing about eating the frozen berries is that they're way cheaper to eat that way.
Yeah. It's so convenient. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you can get like a giant bag for, you know, $12 or something with tons and tons of frozen berries compared to getting like a little, you know, 8-ounce package of whatever. And then they stay good. Like the, you know, there's been times we will go to a grocery store and just like destroy the fresh berries like while we're sitting in the store.
I know.
You know, and then, but just to kind of be able to have it throughout the week, the frozen berries.
And you can throw it in a smoothie and you can put it on top of a dessert and you can always reach in and just grab a handful and put it in your oatmeal. We use maple syrup every time to sweeten it, the oatmeal, once it's cooked. And then one kid will just eat it. I mean, like you can't believe by the spoonful with just maple syrup. And the other kid likes little diced up apple. And that's right. It's exactly, it's perfect. And so he will just start spooning apple in his mouth, like these blueberries you're talking about, not realizing he's also getting this incredibly nutritious start of his day with the oatmeal. Cereals too. I don't know if you eat cereal at all in your house.
Yeah. It's like less popular. We like the ones that have the, like the mazes and the games on the back, but I think that's why they like them. I don't think they're that into them otherwise.
It's more of a toy. Well, we again, with the gluten-free household, luckily there's a lot of very popular brands now that have rolled out a gluten-free version. Cheerios and Chex are two that come to mind, but there are definitely delicious options that, you know, a splash of almond milk and, like you said, some fruit on top. Very simple breakfast. Kids love it. Lasts in the pantry forever. And it makes easy breakfast. We also do frozen sort of waffles. There's gluten-free vegan waffle, like an Eggo waffle that we can put in the toaster. And those are great because they can actually get carried out of the house if we're running a little bit late. But, you know, all of these things are simple. And as you said, all of these things are things that already are vegan, and people don't realize how simple it can be to sustain and thrive on a vegan diet.
Yeah, the already vegan breakfast bars.
Yes.
There's just so many of them now.
I know.
You know, Lara bars or just any of the bar brands. I mean, they're not all vegan, but it's very easy to find vegan bars, and that's a good on-the-go breakfast. And then pancakes, you can make all different sort of versions of the pancakes. And
we do that too, yeah.
And mostly, I think,
mostly doing that on the weekends just because it takes more time.
Yeah, pancakes. Yeah. But I'm glad that you mentioned the maple syrup that has magnesium in it. It's better than just, you know, eating straight sugar.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And that sort of reminded me, kind of brings me back to my pregnancy days and having like younger babies and toddlers, because there was always like some insecurity about like, are they getting enough iron? Are they getting enough other nutrients? And now I don't really feel that way anymore. But I know a lot of people kind of, because I feel like as long as they're eating, you know, a lot of good fruits and vegetables, different colors, you know, they're going to be getting what they need. But molasses has iron in it.
So
that's something you can put in your smoothie. If I was sort of worried about, oh, they didn't get enough nutrients, I would throw into the smoothie, I would put Vega or raw meal. And that's just like, I mean, it might be a little bit of overkill even, but
I know.
It's just, if you feel like, if you feel like, hey, you know, I'm a little worried about this, like they love it. It's, you know, made from really good food. And so throw it in your smoothie along with whatever, your berries and your soy milk or almond milk or whatever.
And the thing is, you know that you've sent them off in the morning with a nutritionally balanced meal, you know, breakfast that gets them started. It's got everything you need. So what about things like cake mixes, muffin mixes? Do you have any of those dried?
A lot of that stuff is vegan. A lot of that stuff is total junk food, but so still vegan. I mean,
and it's simple.
Yeah, and it is. It's like, it's very easy to make like cupcakes or muffins or whatever with some of that. And oddly, a lot of the frosting, that just store-bought frosting, that even when it says something like cream cheese, a lot of times is vegan.
I know. Again, not these aren't healthy recommendations, but they are in my cupboard right now. I'll tell you, we do make muffins quite a bit because we use the mini muffin tins. And a lot of places, Trader Joe's, here where I live, we have a franchise called Wegmans. They have gluten-free, let's say, pumpkin muffin mix or gluten-free mm-hmm. apple muffin mix. And so instead of eggs, you use applesauce. And instead of dairy milk, you, of course, use non-dairy milk. It takes, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes to whip up the batter and maybe 5 minutes to fill all the little tiny, you know, muffin tins and 20 minutes to bake. And then you could put those in the freezer. And the same thing we were talking about before, where you could just toss those in a lunchbox and they'll be defrosted by lunchtime. They're great at breakfast time. But these, you know, pantry ready in your cupboard cake mixes, mostly, like you said, are vegan. A lot of them are healthier than others, and they're very super easy to make for your family. Beans. What's your story on beans?
Yeah, we use a lot of beans. Like, I would say that most of our food is generally probably some kind of Asian food or some kind of like Mexican or similar cuisines. Yep. So on the Mexican side, we use a lot of beans, like a lot of black beans, pinto beans. But we also use lentils, and that goes into the Instapot, or it can even go in the rice cooker and mix them with the rice. And then you can use that for like Middle Eastern style food or Mexican style food. I mean, we're not like generally not really standing on ceremony for like keeping everything sort of perfect and nice. Like, this is just sort of quick grabbing food. Right. So, you know, it's easy to just like throw something on a tortilla and, you know, whatever else you want to put on top. Yeah. And I think having that as like the sort of, you know, I would say lentils are and beans are kind of part of that starch category. That's sort of your base. You can do a lot to add to it. And I would say sweet potatoes and potatoes are also a big part of that base. Like, it's very easy to do a really good like stuffed sweet potato and kind of customize it.
Yeah, so maybe you can answer a question for me that I haven't found an answer to. And I probably could Google it, but I think it'll be more fun talking with you about it. Why do they dry beans?
That's a good question. I wonder if it's just to keep them
fresh.
Be. Yeah. I mean, we used to sprout beans a long time ago.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
We had these, like, crazy, like, it was funny. We were talking, the previous podcast, we were talking about the holiday lists, like the Secret Santa.
Yep.
And one year, my husband got really into this idea of sprouting beans. So the only thing he had on his holiday list for like my entire extended family was he wanted these hemp bags to sprout his beans. And he wanted like these bean sprouting starter kits.
And then just eat them by the handful?
Well, yeah, you can just eat them directly or you can put them in stuff. But yeah, but supposedly the sprouted ones are, you know, more, you can absorb the nutrients better and they taste fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're not for like, I would not expect like sort of your typical picky 1 year old to eat them. but I will say, I think it's a lot easier to veganize sort of your habits and your household around like family eating if you get away from the like Northern and Western European cuisines. Like if you don't think, oh, well, what am I going to do about like, you know, basically sausage and hamburger heavy stuff. Of course, you can still do that. You can still get the vegan versions.
Right, right, yeah.
But there's so many cuisines that are really vegetable and grain heavy to begin with.
Yeah, there's actually this stew that hopefully we'll mention it in an upcoming episode because my wife introduced me to it and I keep begging her to make it. It's called Tigga Digga Na, and it's actually the African peanut.
Oh, I just made it. I just made that. I just found on one of these like best 2018 recipe lists a recipe for that because Native Foods here in LA used to have that soup sometimes. And I loved it. And it's really super easy to make. The recipe that I found is super easy to make. And everybody really liked it. I mean, it's like if you ate too much of it, it would be too much. But but it's really good. And it's pretty healthy like overall. But it was really good.
So back to sort of the pasta side of this, the Italian side of it. You were talking about different cuisines. What do you do about tomato sauces, tomato paste, marinara, other sauces to add to dishes?
Yeah, there's a ton of vegan as-is store-bought pasta sauces. Yeah. There's also some very easy pasta sauces to cook. I grew up mostly having, like, I would say there were three main categories of food. One would be your typical Midwestern kind of bland food that you put in a casserole dish with like cream of whatever soup. I don't really carry that tradition on, like, no offense, Mom. But that's not because I couldn't veganize it. It's just because, ew. The other two, though, categories from what I grew up was sort of like a lot of Italian food and a lot of Eastern European food, like especially Polish food.
Yep.
The Italian food is very easy to veganize. It's very easy, like you said, to make like a vegan pesto, like lasagna, you know, stuffed shells. Like, I do all of that stuff. That's sort of more of our indulgent stuff, if we're going to get into that. And there's really nothing that I've, you know, kind of been like, oh, this is a favorite of mine in childhood that I can't make a really good vegan version of. On the Polish side, it took me a long time to find a vegan pierogi. And I finally found one, but it's also became clear to me that you can just make them without the egg and they taste the same. So,
wow, that's ambitious.
Yeah. Well, and then I think I mentioned in a previous podcast that something that we do is like pick a country off the globe and then make a recipe from it. So we did Russia one time, and we did pierogies, which are not actually like pierogies, but because they're kind of like more of a bread. And that was really delicious. And it's very easy to just find a vegan version of these recipes that are still like traditional versions.
Yeah, I did find at our local freezer vegan pierogies and hadn't had them since I went vegan. And as I grew up, my mom would just boil them and then sort of saute them in butter and serve them to us that way. And it brought back so many memories, a flood of amazing memories of eating pierogies as a kid. So as you're saying, there's so many things out there that you don't know. They're not even necessarily labeled vegan, if you think about it. These pierogies aren't labeled vegan. You turn them over and you look for the bold ingredients or the allergen ingredients, the ones that are, you know, always listed last, which are eggs and dairy. We look for wheat, of course, because of gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you're just reading them to make sure there's no meat ingredients. And then you could dig a little deeper and make some more effort or conscious decisions based on palm oil or wherever you stand on other things that may or may not fit into your ethics. But there's so many things that you can just sort of scour the freezer section of any grocery store and find out that there's so much that's already vegan.
Yeah, it's really not difficult once you kind of get into that habit. I mean, once you have the habit, it just becomes part of life like anything else. One thing I do want to talk about, though, is this perception that, oh, you know, I couldn't get my kids to eat vegetables. Idea that kids are picky and it's too hard. And I think some of that gets carried into adulthood. Like, I know a lot of adults that are still like self-described picky eaters, which I think is kind of funny. But I do think what everybody of all ages should really remember is that you have control over your preferences. Like, these are conditioned preferences. So, you know, if you don't like a certain vegetable or you're not used to eating that, you can just make a goal to eat more of them. And then over the course of time, not very long, you'll start actually liking them.
Yeah.
You know, so I think when people feel like, oh, I could never go vegan, or I could never get my kids to eat more healthy food, or, oh, I'm vegan, but I'm worried that the kids are just eating, you know, ketchup and vegan chicken nuggets or whatever, which I've been there. you know, I think, you know, you have to remember, you just have to keep exposing them to these other kinds of foods, because their preferences will change and you can intentionally change those preferences.
Yeah, and that's a good lead into my next section of my cupboard here, the spice rack, and where we keep our oils and vinegars. And so, as you know, on a whole foods plant-based diet, you don't consume oil. which is where I'm lucky that I'm vegan for the animals, because we do use oil for our cooking as well as our flavoring. When you were talking about making vegetables taste great, you can take, again, a frozen organic broccoli, defrost it, put a little sesame oil on it, a little bit of sea salt, and that by itself is absolutely delicious. It's one of the Korean side dishes, and our kids will eat that up at lunch. So we use olive oil, grapeseed oil, and sesame oil in some of our cooking. But I do want to talk about how wonderful the variety of vinegars that are out there, how much they add to so many recipes, and that people should try them. If it asks for vinegar, don't be shy about using, you know, a flavored vinegar or a garlic vinegar or enhanced vinegar or a peach vinegar. There's so many things that are by themselves a wonderful salad dressing, just by putting vinegar on something. So oil and vinegar is a big part of our sort of spice rack pantry. And then there's the spices. And as I said in the intro, I would say, I know that 100% of the spices we have here are vegan. And I would say that we're not missing out on any of the spices that you would need for any recipe. So you can go down the line from garlic powder to garlic salt to onion powder to some, you know, custom spices that actually all the flavors put into one shaker to make dishes easy to make. Dried oregano, some dried basil. These are things that, you know, we're using all the time that are at arm's reach that you can put on top of any of these dishes.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up the spice thing because I hadn't thought about this for a while. But when the kids were babies, I used to spend a lot of time just entertaining them by smelling all the different spices.
Oh, yes. That's great.
And then so they're, you know, especially my older one's really into gardening and he wants to, like, you know, he's always like finding like, I found wild rosemary. I'm like, well, actually it's like in someone's garden. They like planted it, but it's fine. Same difference. But, you know, they're now really into like, you know, spices and herbs and stuff because they like that kind of thing. They'll still go in there and find what they want to include. And we got, there's all different extracts. Like we just, for a birthday party, I made the frosting for, we did a cupcake cake for my three-year-old who really wanted a really detailed sort of tableau of superheroes getting rescued by an ambulance and a doctor, like an action figure doctor, which, by the way, is really hard to find. I found a Lego of a woman doctor, which actually was great. But it's really hard to find an action figure of a doctor. Anyway, so we made this cupcake cake, set up this whole scene on it, and it was a very mixed crowd, like vegans, non-vegans. And so I wanted it to be extra good frosting. And I found these extracts that were like hazelnut or caramel extract. And all that stuff was vegan. They're artificial flavored. That ended up making the frosting taste amazing. So we have that kind of stuff in the spice rack. And, you know, you can kind of like play around with that. Even put that like in your smoothie or your like, you know, vegan ice cream or whatever.
Do you think, have we covered our cupboards and pantries? I mean, is that kind of the basics to get everyone started to provide as much support as possible? If anyone has anything we missed, by all means, reach out to us. We're always looking for feedback and ideas for upcoming episodes, as well as improvements to episodes we've aired. So veganfamily@triveg.com. Send us your thoughts. Send us what you're keeping in your vegan cupboards. And anything else, Cheryl?
And you can send us audio clips, too. Whether it's
by all means,
a tip or a question or a kid talking or all of the above.
We would love that. Yes.
But yeah, on the pantries, it's funny because I've sort of used to this. It's, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. So I would love to hear what people find to be a difficult issue or something that they're trying to resolve, you know, because there's so many different ways people think about food. You know, there's so many different sort of food personalities and ways people think about what's healthy and what's, you know, fun and all of that. So I'd love to sort of hear some different perspectives on that.
All right. I want to end on a tip for you because I know you have a Trader Joe's nearby.
I have a Trader Joe's like 10 stops from where I'm sitting right now.
Oh my gosh. Our closest is 2 hours away. So we have to make special requests. So they have the Everything But the Bagel Spice Shaker. Have you tried that yet?
No.
So it's all of the ingredients that go on an everything bagel. It's the garlic powder, onion powder, poppy seed, sesame seed, sea salt, all in one shaker. And we picked it up. I didn't know where we were going to use it. And then I saw someone post a photo of their avocado toast covered in this everything but the bagel.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
we can't
eat avocado toast.
We're an avocado toast like obsessive family, I would
say. Well, get one shaker, but while you're there you might as well buy two, cuz you're going to run right through it. Then we found out you can shake this on top of the soups that we make. We make these like butternut squash soups, a broccoli tofu soup. We make these soups that the kids actually just really love, but by shaking this on top of it, it's almost like a gamasio, which is that sea salt and sesame shaker that's used in macro cooking a lot. Mm-hmm. But shake this on pretty much anything, and your kids are going to eat it.
Okay, I need to do that like right now.
You've got to try it. Everything but the bagel. It's an amazing label. It's really very affordable. Obviously, you can even make it yourself when you're talking about things to do with your kids. There's very few ingredients. You could just whip this up and keep refilling your own fillers. Mm-hmm. But we are addicted to it in this household. In fact, I just sent someone up to Syracuse to our closest Trader Joe's, and he brought back 3 bottles for me. So we're all set for a while. We can hunker down for the winter.
Nice. Your supplies.
Exactly. We're supplied. Well, thank you. This has been a great episode. I think that people are going to learn a lot about how simple it is to keep their kids full and fortified, and what they can keep in their cupboard and pantry. And I'm hoping we'll do another episode about other ingredients, other recipes and food and things in our fridges. Any closing comments?
No, I just really want to kind of hear about other people's ways of thinking about this, other traditions around food. You know, how do you make your history sort of align with veganism and pick out the things that you really want to carry forward and, you know, be creative about it. I love to hear about that kind of thing.
Reach out veganfamily@triveedge.com. Send us tips and advice and recipes and ideas and sound bites. We would love some audio clips of you and your family enjoying your vegan lifestyle. And as always, subscribe, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in to Compassion Over Killing's Vegan Family Podcast. Have episode ideas or questions about going vegan? Email us at govegan@triveedge.com.